I need to ask you, what's the price?
I'm going to ask and make sure.
Huh?
Yeah. Mrs. Scott, were you done? Were you finished? Okay, right now. Okay, I just wanted to be sure. We took a break and I didn't get to ask myself. Okay. Okay. Is there anyone here in favor of this application?
Mr. Chairman, the Planning and Zoning Department received 9 letters in favor.
Okay.
You got some back here, raise your hand.
They again have a show of hand of those that are in favor of this. We have 1, 2, 3. Would you like to come up? Anything you would like to say at this time? All those that would like to, please come forward at this time and be sworn in. Again, all those in favor. Okay. 9 letters. Okay.
Name and address, please.
Brian Pepper, 30735 Molly B. Road, Lewis, Delaware.
Ladies and gentlemen, please we'll let the gentleman have his turn and I'll get with each and one of you.
You swear from
thank you.
The testimony about to give me the truth, all truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Good evening, sir.
I'm Brian Pepper, the Chief Operating Officer of Pep Up Inc. We run fuel trucks all over the shore, and we find in areas not only like Bethany Beach, but in Chrisfield and other areas of the shore, we have cellular tower problems, and our trucks can't communicate and hauls it. Hauling hazardous materials is a very dangerous situation. We can't contact 911 or anybody for assistance. And I'm in support of the tower.
All right, sir. Thank you. Is there any persons here that in opposition to this application? Okay. Would you please keep them up just for a moment, please? No, just keep your hands up.
No, it's please. Easier to count, actually, if you sit down and just
sit down. I appreciate it, please. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9, 10, 9,
What'd you say?
42, the best that I, 42, the best that I could get counted. I'm sorry?
42 to 2.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Witzel, just before we get started, you had asked earlier about questions to some of the applicant witnesses. And what we'd like you to do is to read those questions into the record. Mr. Calloway will then determine which questions should be directed to which individual. And I think what we'll do is have you all present your case, and then we'll come back to the applicant and the witnesses, and we'll phrase those questions at that time.
That's easier.
Okay, Mr. Burrell. Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Robert.
I'm sorry. Just let me interrupt you one other thing. I talked with Mr. Witzel just before we got started. I understand he doesn't necessarily represent everybody here. So he's going to present his case for his specific clients, and then other individuals who are here on their own, or if they're represented by others, give them an opportunity to speak as well.
Most definitely.
Yes.
Okay.
Once again, good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Robert Witzel. I am here on behalf of the Sea Pines Village Condominium Association of Owners Board of Directors.
Sea Pines, okay.
And a couple of other clients whose names are David Girk and Gary Bogosian, who is also the president of the Board of Directors. There are many persons behind me who I have never spoken with, never corresponded with. They may be unit owners of Sea Pines Village. They may be owners of other proximate properties, or they may have their own opinions. I cannot speak for them, and I will not speak for them this evening, so I think that the board should recognize that I'm not a spokesman for everyone.
Okay.
I appreciate this limited opportunity to ask some questions to the other party. As you know, Mr. Burrell has made a legal decision on your behalf that I am not entitled to cross-examine those witnesses that have been presented to you this evening, even those expert witnesses. I do have several questions, though. And as cumbersome as this may seem, I will go through those questions now.
Okay.
So that you may think about them. I don't know how to do this in a non-tedious method, but I'm going to work in reverse order of the witnesses that you have just heard from. Obviously, you heard from Brian Pepper, of the CEO of PepUp, and he is the leaseholder, the apparent leaseholder of the lease with AT&T. And my question is, what is the lease? What was the lease amount? And he also mentioned that he cannot contact 911. I would like to know if he has AT&T service and why he cannot contact 911 on any occasion that he has had to call 911. In terms of Mr. McCann's testimony, I would like a confirmation that for all periods of time for the appraisals and the studies that he performed, that the cellular towers that he referenced were already in place, that there has not been, in his study, any analysis of a before and after tower location. His matched pairs, as I understand them, are based on existing premises, existing properties proximate to a cell tower. And his comparison is only in the distance from the cell tower. So I would like a confirmation that his study did not include any of the fire tower new structures. In short, that his study was based upon a pre-existing cell tower and properties that have moved into the area or constructed since the cell tower or the water tower was built. For Mr. Trice, who stated that the Sea Pines Village unit that was under foreclosure was not an appropriate matched pair or study, I would like to know why, because that unit was for sale during the foreclosure period, and why he didn't make an analysis of that foreclosed unit. That, by the way, was in foreclosure during the time of this tower controversy. For Mr. Calabretta, I would like to confirm that his calculations of highest wind speed of 120 miles an hour did not include any snow load or any other force of element such as water, rain, or any other inclement condition. And to confirm that that he has observed the site and has observed the stormwater management pond that is proximate to the tower. I would also ask Mr. Calabretta if he is aware of any cell towers that have been that have caught on fire during construction or maintenance, whether he's aware of any cell towers that have toppled from wind or snow or natural elements in the United States within the past 5 years. Mr. Calabretta also stated that there was a 71-feet boundary to the south, and I would like to confirm that if that tower toppled, that would extend 29 feet into Sea Pines Village property, common area, or elements. Mr. Chairman, I'm afraid I'm giving you a lot of homework.
It's okay.
For Mr. Riefel, he stated during the conclusion of his testimony that the range of a 100-foot cell tower would be 1.5 miles. Although he stated that three towers, the Beaver Dam site, the ATC-2 tower, and the ATC-3 tower, were all 1/3 of a mile away from the proposed location. And the question would be, if the range of a 100-foot cell tower is 1.5 miles, why could those three towers not provide a good co-location site? For Mr. Riefel also, did he account for, in any of his analysis and testimony, for the beaming of a signal, a concentration of a signal in a specific direction? We would also like to know who the providers are on the three towers that he said were 3/4 of a mile away, and what coverage or what analysis they've made of the coverage of those other providers. Apparently, there must be three other providers on those three other towers that are providing relatively complete service. For Mr. Riefel, what other methods are there of increasing coverage and reception other than installing a new cellular tower? For example, utility pole antennas or femtocells or alternative methods to a cellular tower. This morning across the news headlines was AT&T's acquisition of T-Mobile. And we have evidence that T-Mobile has adequate service, actually very good reception in this area. And our question would be, what effect on either immediate or in the near future reception does this acquisition have on AT&T's potential coverage? For Mr. Riefel, and I'm sure you might have this question as well, gentlemen, what is a prediction tool? I mentioned it several times. What does that tool take into account?
What was it? Excuse me, what was that again?
The prediction tool that you mentioned. What does that tool take into account, and how is it manipulable? Does he manipulate the prediction tool? Does he predict with it, or does someone else who's not here this evening do that? and Mr. Rifel might not know how that tool is used. But that is the tool that is telling him that there's incomplete service that he's telling you about. And finally, for Mr. Zolna, in regards to the Bethany Beach correspondence, which he indicated to you, led to his conclusion that Bethany Beach was not interested in having a cellular tower. My questions are, is March 2, 2005, the last communication that Mr. Zolna made with the town of Bethany Beach about a cell tower opportunity? And I'll briefly summarize, if I may now shift a little bit to my presentation, that in our correspondence, we also copied the letter from town manager Cliff Gravier and the town of Bethany Beach mayor in his January 31st, 2011 correspondence, in which the town objected to this application. That objection does not mean that the town is not interested in its own cellular tower service or providing of cellular location to AT&T. It simply means that they oppose this application. So,
was that in the package we're looking at now, this book that you've circulated?
Yes. Yes, and it's in the opponent's letters as well. And I believe that Mr. Zolna admitted that correspondence. That letter opposing this application has nothing to do with Bethany Beach's interest or disinterest in having a cellular tower location on its water tower. Additionally, the Bethany Beach, I'm not quite sure what this is, but it seems to be a newspaper article that AT&T submitted into the record, was totally unsolicited by AT&T. And I would like to know if Mr. Zolna approached the town of Bethany Beach at any time after 2005 to inquire whether either a co-location or a location on their tower was possible. We believe the answer is no to that. I'm sorry, Adam, so long. And thank you for that opportunity to ask some questions.
Okay.
I would have one more, and
use that one for.
I believe that this would be for Mr. Rifel or Mr. Zolna, as to whether AT&T has received any warnings or fines or admonitions to date from the FCC about their alleged lack of coverage. And on to my presentation. I hope we can perform this in a relatively quick period of time. I noted at the break that AT&T was approximately 2 hours and 10 minutes into their presentation. We don't expect to be that long, but I do hope you will hear from everyone. Contrary to the insinuations of Ms. Scott, this is not a continuation of the prior hearing that we had in September of 2009. As you recall, that hearing was procedurally flawed, and Judge Graves determined that that was the improper notification was performed when he made his decision in October of 2010. Because of those notification errors, many people who are here tonight and many people who wanted to prepare for that hearing were not provided an opportunity, and you will find tonight that this is a very different application. As soon as we were aware of the possibility of an appeal, we put AT&T at notice. We told them that they could proceed at their own risk, and they did. And that is the reason why there is a temporary cellular tower there now without permits, and for which the county has issued violation notices. It is presently an illegal tower. And although Judge Graves made a decision just recently that that tower could stay until tonight or until you make a decision, there are no permits for that tower. And AT&T comes before you this evening with unclean hands. They were put on notice, they lost the case, and they didn't take the cell tower down when the notice was provided to them by this county. Someone made a decision at the county level not to proceed on the notification, on the notice violation, but they have an illegal cell tower operating at this time. And they're coming to you asking for a favor. I have taken the opportunity to look at your case precedent in the last 3 years for cell tower applications. And you have done an impressive job. For 7 of your last 9 cases, you have approved cell towers when 2 people or less, and on 4 occasions, no persons stood in opposition to the application. They range from, and you'll recall better than I, the AT&T application at Road 365, where there were 2 opponents. The AT&T application, this is number 10221, east of Route 113, there was no opposition. One opponent came to the Tidewater Utilities application on Irons Lane. There was one opponent for the Liberty Towers case west of Route 78. No opposition for the Cricket Communications Tower application in July of 2010. Liberty Towers made another application for Little Assawoman Bay. There were no opponents. In the 2 cases in the past 5 years, where there have been significant opposition, this board denied the application. And that was for the Route 490A. It was on the Nanticoke River just in 2009 when Mark Hardesty and his colleagues came in front of you to oppose it. Mark gave testimony about diminution of property values. He said it will substantially affect detrimentally his enjoyment and use of his property. You recall that. It was the same sort of testimony that we're hearing tonight from the applicants. We have a gap in coverage. We have experts to tell you that won't impact the property values. We have appraisers. But you believed Mr. Hardesty and you believed his colleagues in the opposition of that application. And then 5 years ago when the Fords stood in front of you in an application on Byard Road just down 365 near Ocean View, there was significant opposition from a number of persons from the surrounding area. They talked about the visual impact that would occur. They talked about the negative impact on traffic. They talked about their safety concerns, their property values, and the aesthetic effect on their scenic back trail, as you may recall. And you denied that application, and that case went to court. And Judge Stokes made several comments in his upholding of that decision in the Singular Wireless of PA case. He supported your decision, and he approved and upheld your denial. And in doing so, he specifically mentioned that persons who have special knowledge of the value and are competent to testify are those persons who are property owners proximate to this sort of an application. That by reasons of their ownership, they're perceived to have special knowledge. And he noted that there were comments and opinions and testimony from realtors as well. In this case, unlike the last time the case was before you, unlike the Singular Wireless case with the Fords and Byard, we not only have an anticipated impact, but we have a known impact, a known experience. There is an 80-foot wooden cellular temporary tower on location, which these people behind me have lived with for the past 8.5 months. And they know the impact on their rental values, and they know the impact on their enjoyment of their property, and they know the impact on their property values, and they're prepared to tell you that. They're prepared to tell you that they sit in their living rooms and in their bedrooms and they see the flashing lights, and they can only anticipate what's going to happen when a 100-foot tower comes in with at least 2 layers of flashing lights. But these are the persons who have firsthand knowledge of what's going to be, what has occurred there and what will occur there. We also have expert witnesses, which you'll hear from in just a moment. We have a radio frequency engineer of unquestionable qualifications who is going to talk about, one, the fact that AT&T can beam their signal in a specific direction, which they haven't done yet, to provide coverage in this quote-unquote gap area. He will tell you that he doubts there's really a gap in coverage. He will tell you about alternative methods of providing coverage and alternative sites, and it's convincing, real testimony. We also have 2 appraisers to talk to you tonight about their opinions and their studies. There is correspondence in the file from the town of Bethany Beach, who is opposed to this application through their correspondence of their mayor, from the Bethany Beach Landowners Association. There are over 65 letters in the file and over 560 petitions in the file. Now, I've looked at those petitions, and they are far-ranging, but so are the 9 letters that you received. There's people in favor of this application wrote from New York. They didn't say they were local residents. They said they were from New York or New York City. In the petitions, they're worldwide. There's letters, petitions in there from persons in Poland. But they talk about the lack of enjoyment of the property, not about the need for cellular communications. Those 9 letters that are in the file simply say, we want to have good cellular service. And those people and those letters are unaware of the alternatives that you're going to hear about tonight for better cellular coverage. If we could briefly turn to my documents, in the left-hand side of the package, I'll go through these as quickly as I can. On the left-hand side first is a proposed finding of facts that I've drafted for the opponents. I prepared that for Mr. Burrell's reference and for yours. The last 2 pages are the applicable statutes. And I will ask you to look at that after the application and before you make a decision. Exhibit number 1 is something you have not seen from the applicants, and it is a photograph and a depiction of the residential property to the east, south, and north of the proposed site, which is on the easel to my left. It is in direct contrast to the site plan, which the applicants submitted with their first and with this application, which simply shows the Pepper and Steiner site without any reference to individual units or residential property behind it. There are 46 units to See Pine Village. Excuse me. The location of the cellular tower, the present location of the wooden cellular tower and the proposed location is the same, and it is exactly where these 3 concrete markers are, right there. The 71 feet to the boundary line to the south extends this way. And there are 3 units that fall within 100 feet of the fall zone of the tower, which you'll hear from testimony is 100 feet. If it were to fall directly down without splintering or without extending from its base. At the Pepper and Steiner site are gasoline tanks and propane tanks in this rear area, also creating a tremendous hazard if the pole were to fall to the west. But most importantly, you'll see in a diagram that Mr. Boghossian is going to discuss, the fall zone on the south side extends into three units and into the common areas of Sea Pine Village. But this exhibit is the first time that you've seen the proximity of the site to the residential properties of my clients. The next photograph, exhibit number 2, shows the present cellular wooden temporary tower. This is looking from the east across the stormwater management pond. The foxtails are on the eastern edge of the stormwater management pond to the several units to the south of Sea Pine Village. Exhibit number 3 is the same tower, of course, taken from the south, looking from approximately 4 residential units. Mr. Boghossian will explain the next 4 exhibits. This is his Photoshop exhibit of the 100-foot tall tower. He will describe the scaling to you. This is what it will look like if it is approved by you. And exhibit number 5 is what it looks like, what it looked like before the temporary tower was installed from the same location. Similarly, exhibit number 6 shows a view looking directly from the south to the north, showing 5 or 6 Sea Pines residential units with the photoshopped 100-foot tall monopole, if you were to approve it. And number 7 shows without the existing tower at all. As you mentioned earlier, in terms of correspondence from Bethany Beach, the mayor of Bethany Beach, Tony McLennan, has executed exhibit number 8, which is a January 31, 2001 correspondence strongly opposing the construction of a cellular tower immediately adjacent to the corporate limits of the town of Bethany Beach and Sea Pines community. As he has noted in previous correspondence, they chimed in during the first application. Nowhere in the unincorporated portion of Sussex County have we been able to find a cell tower permitted in such close proximity to densely populated residential communities. The fact in and of itself should give the Board of Adjustment pause for concern. In addition, local property owners have professionally documented the significant impact this proposed construction will have on all the property values of the many residential homes that fall in the shadow of this proposed tower. In a housing market that has been already shattered by hard economic times, the construction of this tower is a blow that creates an incredible hardship for affected property owners. They ask you to reject the application and encourage all parties involved to work with the county government to find an alternative solution to this. Exhibit number 9 was submitted by Greg Cox. Greg is here this evening, and he will come up later to describe the contents of that letter and to talk to you briefly. Exhibit number 10 is a letter from Grace Gentura. She is not here tonight. She could not be here. And this is a compelling letter, which I ask you to take a look at after the hearing. She is has power of attorney for her parents. None of them could be here this evening. But they wanted you to know how distressed they are that AT&T has been seeking to erect a 100-foot cell tower only a few hundred feet from their Ashwood Court property. She talks about the natural setting of the home on Ashwood Court, that the construction of a large cell tower less than 200 feet away would mar our visits with an aesthetic eyesore not in keeping with the natural habitat that we have enjoyed. More problematic is the contemplated lighting of this tower at night. These lights would pose an unwelcome distraction to those of us using our front porch and would present an almost insurmountable problem to anyone trying to sleep in the bedrooms on the south side of the house where the proposed tower would be located. She goes on to talk about that in the bottom paragraph on the first page, people seeking to buy a home in Bethany Beach are no doubt looking for the same environment that her parents recognized when they purchased their lot. A quiet natural setting as close to the beach as possible. Such buyers are not looking for blinking lights and a view of commercial structures. She believes her parents are rightly concerned that it would be less desirable to prospective buyers if the tower were to be constructed, and consequently the resale value of their home would be appreciably reduced. I won't paraphrase the rest of the letter, but I do encourage you to take a look at that. The Bethany Beach Landowners Association submitted exhibit number 11 on January 31st, 2011. The association has over 700 members and includes many of the owners of the approximately 16 Bethany Beach homes that fall within 500 feet of the property on which AT&T is seeking to erect a new 100-foot-tall monopole. The association opposes the application and urges the board to deny it. They believe there is near universal opposition to AT&T's proposal, not only among its members, but throughout the entire area in and surrounding Bethany Beach. That widely, if not universally held perception, is that such cell towers are highly inappropriate and objectionable when placed near homes. No one affirmatively wants to live in a home within the shadow of one of these ugly structures, and as a result, the erection of a new one when no similar structure is present is virtually certain to depress property values by reducing the attractiveness of the home site. They also go on to state that there are approximately 16 existing homes within 500 feet of the AT&T proposed site, including 16 units inside the corporate limits of Bethany Beach and another 46 homes in Sea Pine Village. They say that many of those 62 residences are within 200 feet of the AT&T site, and that they do not believe that there is any other communication tower or monopole in Sussex County that is located so predominantly near a residential area as this one. And they urge the board to not permit such a new intrusion on residential areas. Identical to the exhibit that was introduced by AT&T is Exhibit 12, the January 31st 2011 correspondence from Cliff Gravier, the town manager of the town of Bethany Beach. And he states that in May of 2010, he contacted Mr. Zolna and asked him if his company and AT&T, in light of issues with the proposed installation of the tower and AT&T's cell antenna immediately adjacent to Sea Pines community, would consider installing an antenna on the standpipe at the Bethany Beach water plant. He states that without hesitation, Mr. Zolna told him no. And he confirms that since that date, the town of Bethany Beach has received no further communication since Velocitel, AT&T, or any of its representatives concerning the cell tower. The town of South Bethany Beach, which also has a cell tower, which also has a water tower, which would be a suitable location, has not been contacted by AT&T concerning the placement of antennas on the water tower in the town of Bethany Beach, South Bethany. Exhibit 14 is the violation notice submitted to Pepper and Steiner, Inc., and the violation notice submitted to Ms. Scott at Saul Ewing on behalf of AT&T. Violation notices which have been unheeded by the applicant. Mr. Bogosian is going to discuss Exhibit 15 with you, and Mr. Gurk is going to discuss Exhibit 16 with you. At this point, I'd like to direct your attention to exhibit number 17, which is on the right-hand side of the packet, and I'd ask Jeremy Raines to come forward to testify. Mr. Burrell, would you like all of my witnesses to come forward now?
How many people do you think you're going to call?
That we can get them all.
Someone,
maybe. Mr. Bogosian, come forward. Mr. Gert. Gentlemen, Mr. Piper. Andy. Ms. York still here? Vicki?
Vicki was in the back.
Vicki York?
Yeah.
Forward, please, Vicki.
Move, kind of wind your sport, or sell it down this way. Each give the young lady to my left your name and address, please.
Mr. Cox?
Jeremy Raines, R-A-I-N-E-S, 13430, Cleveland Drive, Gulfville, Maryland.
Just step aside, but don't go too far.
Randall Handy, 4751 Briar Road, Cleveland.
David Gerk, G-E-R-K, 14 Sea Pines Village, Bethany Beach, Delaware, 19930.
Gary Bogosian, B-O-G-O-S-S-I-A-N, 2410 Linden Drive, Hafton.
Glenn, G-L-E-M-N, Pike, B-I-P-P-R. I'm Bradford Blaine.
It is. Now, let me ask you. Coffee and wine. You don't know the house.
6470.
Okay. Now, if you can all kind of squeeze down into this general vicinity, please. Gentlemen and Ms. York, do you all swear or affirm testimony about to give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Mr. Raines, you get to stay with me.
It's my pleasure, sir.
Would you please introduce yourself to the board and describe your curriculum vitae, which is just about halfway through your package.
Good evening, members of the board. My name is Jeremy Raines. I'm a consulting engineer specializing in electromagnetics and antennas and radio frequency propagation and related topics. With respect to education, I have a PhD in electromagnetics from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. I have a master's degree in applied physics from Harvard University and a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering also from MIT. My specialty has been antennas and radio wave propagation. Actually, since I was a junior in college, it became a very interesting topic, and I was very fortunate to be able to study with some of the foremost experts in the field. I've been a consulting engineer since 1972, specializing in antenna analysis and design and the transmission, scattering, and propagation of electromagnetic waves. I became involved with cellular telephone-related matters almost at the beginning, in the early to mid-1980s. I did extensive design work for some of the early companies in that business, including Charisma Communications and Midwest Communications. And I've had a variety of projects since then, relating to the design of handsets, the detection of interference, design of intelligent signal boosters, and just recently I was asked to critically examine a number of the antennas actually used by AT&T in their South Florida market. I've been a teacher as well as a consulting engineer, and I've taught courses at the Naval Research Center in Washington, D.C., at the George Washington University, and I've published a book and a number of articles all relating to antennas and radio wave propagation.
Dr. Raines, you were engaged by Sea Pine Village to provide testimony concerning your investigation, evaluation, and consideration of the proposed impact caused by the AT&T tower?
That is correct.
And In your investigation, what have you done? Have you seen the site?
Yes, I have. I began with actually a computer search, which provides satellite and aerial views of the site and surrounding areas, including alternate sites. And then, but that was just a beginning, just a guide, as computer programs always are. I've actually toured the area on the ground and visited a number of those alternate sites, and I'm prepared to talk about those this evening.
What other investigation or evaluation have you performed?
Well, I have reviewed the original application submitted by AT&T and the transcript of their previous application, including their graphics concerning coverage and a reported lack of coverage, and I have formed an opinion concerning those.
You've listened to the AT&T experts this afternoon?
Yes, I've been here since the beginning of the proceedings.
And you had the opportunity to review the testimony that was provided in the prior case of 2 years ago, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
What is your opinion concerning alternate location, alternate technology, and whether or not there is a true gap in coverage, as explained to the board this evening by AT&T?
Well, I wrote those down, I think, pretty succinctly in my written report to you. And it's probably most efficient if I just cite those opinions to you. There are four of them. First, there is no federal requirement that the applicant must improve its coverage. And actually, in my opinion, it's not apparent that there is a gap in coverage. I believe, however, even if there is a gap in coverage, that the applicant can accomplish its desired improvements utilizing its current infrastructure. That is, using its current antennas locations and simply varying the characteristics of those antennas and transmitting units.
How is that done?
Well, antennas are very interesting devices, at least they are to me as a specialist. They have the ability to collimate, focus, or concentrate signal power, and they can also steer it. So you can pretty much point a signal anywhere you want to point it, and you can intensify it pretty much like a lens. The analogy is with a lens on a lighthouse or the lens on a camera. You simply focus the energy in a certain direction, and there's a wide amount of adjustment possible that way. So I think in the testimony I heard this evening, there was no mention of using directional antennas, and I think that's an important technology. It's not a rocket or a brand new untested technology. Directional antennas have been around for almost a century, and AT&T uses them in other installations, and there's just no mention of using them here tonight. But it's my opinion that the coverage that they felt was deficient could be intensified and extended through the use of not too complicated directional antennas.
Is there an expense associated with that redirection?
Yes, there is. Antennas are not for free, but I don't think the expense would be considered very much greater than the expense of their existing antenna. It's simply an option when you select your antenna, how directional you want it to be and where you want to steer the beam.
Dr. Raines, you saw the chart and heard the testimony of the AT&T witnesses concerning the three other towers, the three possible co-location towers and their own tower. Could this redirection technology occur on any one of those towers that appears, pursuant to their testimony, to be approximately 3/4 of a mile away?
In my opinion, most definitely. It's just not a marginal location at all.
Did you also hear the testimony from the AT&T witness that a 100-foot cell tower will provide coverage for approximately 1.5 miles? Mr. Rafael stated that. Did you
I did hear that.
Take note of that. That was ATC 2, ATC 3, and Beaver Dam. The Beaver Dam site are, according to his testimony, and I'll ask you if you understood it, to be 3/4 of a mile away. Is that correct?
I do recall that was the number that he presented.
If that is true, as he stated, and if the range is 1.5 miles from a 100-foot tower, is there any doubt in your mind that AT&T can work a solution to this without the present location?
No, I have no doubt.
Would you tell the board, please, about alternative technology?
There are many, many alternative technologies besides directional antennas. There, for example, if there is insufficient signal inside a home, there is a new technology out called a femtocell. In fact, AT&T is actively promoting the sale of femtocells, and that, in a nutshell, involves installing a micro base station inside your home, and that provides a wireless link to your handset as you move throughout the home. So you've really installed your own little base station, and that base station routes your signal, not outside to one of their big towers where the reception might be in question. It connects directly to the internet, and the internet then routes your signal to where it has to go. So you can actually create your own little a cell phone network inside your home or office. And this is called a femtocell. And once again, AT&T is marketing their own version of it, and they're actively promoting it. So that's one. There's also a well-established technology called a directional antenna system. And these are suitable for very large structures, such as the high-rises. Is it Sea Pines?
Sea Colony.
Sea Colony, that's exactly it. Thank you. These consist of sections of transmission lines that are routed throughout the building, and the transmission lines have cuts or slots in them, and those cuts or slots act as little antennas, and they can radiate or gather signals as required, and you can therefore provide service inside buildings that might present a lot of blockage through a thick wall or ceilings or multiple walls. In fact, this is what is used to maintain coverage when you drive through a tunnel. If you look very carefully, you'll see sections of transmission line up in the ceiling with little cuts or slots in them. And that's exactly what can be applied into large structures that have a lot of natural attenuation due to thick walls. There's still other technology. There was some mention of a lack of coverage in automobiles. A very popular device now is a signal booster, and they're controversial. The AT&T and the other carriers don't like them, and they have some justification for not liking them because they boost signals where they don't need to be boosted, and that sometimes creates some interference. But right around the corner is an intelligent form of signal booster. We should expect to see that, I would say, within the next 12 months or so. And they're smart enough to know when to turn themselves off, so they only provide signal amplification in regions where there's a known lack of coverage. So those are coming. And so those have nothing, those last three things, the femtocell, the distributed antenna system, and the signal boosters, really are quite independent of a new tower or a new base station, such as proposed by AT&T this evening.
Dr. Raines, there's also a technology of adding boosters to other type of towers, like high voltage utility towers.
Yeah, well, strictly speaking, booster is not the term I would use. It's simply another base station. And in fact, the law, according to the Federal Communications Systems, requires that utilities make their poles available to mount cellular antennas. This has been reduced to practice. It's just not a theory. In fact, in my ground tour of Bethany Beach, I saw at least one such installation not too far from the proposed new tower site. And
is there a picture of that in your exhibit?
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. Let's take a look at that.
I direct the board's attention to the third to last page. Third to last page in the packet. And the second to last page.
It's this one.
Could you briefly describe how those work and the type of expense that's involved with that document?
Well, these work like any other cellular tower. It's just that the platform happens to be a utility pole. The antennas you see on top there are the same kind of antennas. And cables run down the utility pole and they go into a radio shack with the same electronic gear that you would find at the base of a cellular tower. So that's how they work. It's simply a different platform that's available courtesy of the power utilities. The expense involved involves some sort of leasing arrangement with the utilities, and that has to be negotiated. But the utilities are required by law to make the poles available, and to the best of my knowledge, that law also stipulates that the poles must be made available at a reasonable cost. In other words, you can't hold the carrier over a barrel to provide this pole to them.
This booster, if I may call it that, you don't like that term, but
I'll defer to your expertise here, Counselor.
This piece of equipment is in South Bethany, is it not?
Yes, it is.
Just along Route 1?
Yes, it is.
And if it's good in South Bethany, why can't it be used in Bethany?
I know of no reason. It really depends on the availability of a utility pole, and in my ground tour, there are plenty of those poles up and down the highway.
In your investigation today or yesterday, you found that this was a singular wireless.
There are two residents on top of that pole, Singular and Verizon.
And Singular is now AT&T, is it not?
Yes, it is.
So this is an AT&T tower in South Bethany.
Yes, it is.
A piece of equipment.
Yes, it is.
And the act that you're referring to is the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which requires electrical providers who have poles like this to provide a space on utility poles. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And I'll submit that as Exhibit 22, if I may. I only have one copy. Dr. Raines, in AT&T's initial correspondence to the board and insinuations tonight, they told the board that they have to provide seamless coverage. Is that a true statement?
I don't believe it is. I think it has factual errors. I did search the Code of Federal Regulations as it relates to communication laws. That's volume 47, and in particular, Chapter 22 is dedicated to cellular telephones, and Chapter 24 is dedicated to PCS or personal communication systems, and that technology is used with transparency along with cellular telephones. In other words, when you pick up your handset, you don't know whether you're using the cell phone frequencies or the PCS frequencies. But Chapter 22 and Chapter 24 of the federal communications law relates to that. And I did search quite extensively for a requirement that coverage be seamless, and I couldn't find the word seamless anywhere. I did also search for the requirement that a certain percentage of the users or population must be served, and in Chapter 22 for cellular, I could find no such reference. There doesn't seem to be any quantitative requirement for coverage. To be fair, in Chapter 24 for PCS, there is a requirement that within 10 years of the granting of the license, two-thirds of the population must be served. So that means that there should be no penalty if one-third of the population isn't served.
Dr. Raines, Mr. Pepper discussed 911 calls and stated that he was concerned about that. One of the AT&T gentlemen explained that this would provide better 911 service. Would you briefly tell the board what happens when you dial 911. If you are an AT&T customer and perhaps there is a gap somewhere in coverage.
To the best of my knowledge, whichever provider picks up that 911 signal relays it. And if your particular provider fails, someone else will pick it up.
So it's a true fact that if you dial 911, any one of the providers in the area are going to pick up on that?
That's correct. It's like a general hailing frequency.
In previous correspondence, not to the board but to the court, AT&T stated that it was a silly argument that cell towers fail in terms of structural integrity, that they fall down. It was a silly argument that they catch on fire. Are you familiar with incidents with cell towers where there is a serious risk of hazard and danger?
Well, I don't want to try and comment on mechanical or civil aspects because I'm just not qualified or experienced in that area. I'm an electromagnetic engineer, not a civil or a mechanical engineer. However, there are a number of general hazards or risks associated with towers, and I did list those in my written report to the board.
Would you go over those, if you would, please?
Yes.
They are on the last page of Dr. Rain's report.
You should bear in mind that it's not just a tower we're talking about. There's a lot of associated hardware and activity that goes with it. It's not just a thing that sits there and quietly does its job. If you should lose power, you should know that there are auxiliary power generators that switch on, and you'll have the noise of diesel generators for as long as power is cut from that facility. Further, and more generally, people will be coming and going to service, inspect, and modify, and do whatever is necessary to that tower. So you'll have trucks and personnel moving in and out of that area. And they'll be climbing the tower and making modifications and attachments and detachments and things like that. It's not a passive activity. There are always things going on these towers. And occasionally, with respect to hazards, people fall off them. There's a report at least every month from some of the professional magazines that this person fell off the tower while he was performing some maintenance or something like that. So it's not a structure where nothing exciting ever happens. Birds like to nest on them, and particularly in this area, you'll see a lot of ospreys looking for places to nest, and if they find a suitable platform, they'll build a giant nest on it. And if you're a bird watcher, that's a good thing. If you're a tower person who needs to keep their tower clear of birds, that's just extra work for you to do. You should know that tall structures attract lightning. That's common sense, and I think you're all aware of that. What you may not be aware of is that there was a study by Japanese telecommunications engineers many, many years ago that showed that the attraction to lightning was directly proportional to the height of the tower. So the higher the tower, the greater the odds of a lightning strike. You've already discussed or heard discussion about the light pollution from the required tower lighting. There's the matter of precedent. If you build one, well, that demonstrates that you can build a tower next to private homes, and the next application will be all that much easier. You've already discussed the fall radius. I'll skip over the electromagnetic radiation hazard because, to be fair, we're talking about low-power transmitters. They're only on the order of about 25 watts, and there aren't that many of them. I would simply caution that when you get up into the a region where you have kilowatts of power, then you need to re-examine those safety standards and and see if there's enough power density out there to be in the area of controversial health effects. It's pretty obvious that these towers are an attractive nuisance. You pick up a, put up a 6-foot fence, that's just a challenge to an adventuresome young person who would like to climb that tower. I think that covers most of the list. I'll simply go to the bottom. We've already talked about the fact that you need to have emergency power generators if you want to maintain communication during a storm, and actually that's a reasonable thing to expect. That's when you need communication, someone helping things. Well, so you're going to store fuel to power that diesel generator, and that's just an extra fire hazard. I think that pretty much covers the general hazards of towers.
Thank you. Dr. Rafael, excuse me, Brock Rafael discussed in his presentation some of the complaints that he had received. Dr. Raines, did you take a look at that chart with me as he was describing that? And I counted approximately 30 red dots on that chart. Did you reach the similar conclusion?
Well, they were countable. It wasn't a smooth distribution. There were a discrete number of complaints, as you could see. They were marked by the letter X. And I guess it raised questions compared with the large volume of call traffic. What percentage was that discrete number of calls? My estimation is it's a very tiny percentage. And another question I would ask is, what about drop calls in other areas? They weren't shown, but for sure they happen. Wireless communication just has drop calls. It's just one of the things that happens.
Even under the best circumstances?
Even under the best, well, by definition, that's not the best of circumstances, but even a well, robustly designed system will experience drop calls, and it can be for the most surprising of reasons. Something just fails, and the calls drop. So you'll never have a zero-risk wireless communication system. There will always be some. It's just a matter of what the percentage is.
Did you hear from Mr. Rafael over what time period those complaints were registered?
No, I did not.
I didn't either. And he didn't have a comparison chart for other areas served, as you mentioned. Correct?
That's correct.
What is a prediction tool?
Well, in the context of the presentation this evening, it's a computer-based model used to forecast signal strength. And if the signal's strong enough, you call it reliable. If the signal is weaker, you call it not reliable. And but it's just a tool. It's a computer-generated model, and it's based on assumptions and approximations. And just because it creates an elegant display, it doesn't mean that it's either precise or accurate. Should always question those. And in particular, for radio wave propagation at these short wavelengths, there's a wide margin of uncertainty simply because the number of obstacles are imponderable. They're countless. You couldn't possibly model those or represent those exactly in a computer program. It has to be an approximation or statistical sort of thing, and with that comes a uncertainty. Now, these propagation models ultimately stem from the pioneering work of Philip Rice and Alice Longley, who were FCC research scientists, and they are the creators of the Longley-Rice mathematical model for radio wave propagation. And it was my good fortune to be acquainted with Phil Rice, and we often discussed how accurate these propagation models might be, and he said, "You're lucky if they're accurate to within 10 dB. Well, if you don't speak decibels, which is a dB, that's a factor of 10. So, you know, these computer models are only good to about within an order of magnitude.
Dr. Raines, did you hear any underlying basis for Mr. Rafael's opinion that this prediction tool was correct?
No, I was anxiously waiting for him to provide a confidence level or a level of uncertainty, and he may know that, and he may provide it at a later time. So no, I, you know, as I said, to the best of my knowledge and experience, these computer models of very complicated geometries and phenomena have a wide margin of uncertainty with them. They just are not deterministic. It's not that there's an exact equation that you can solve using a computer. We haven't reached that stage and probably never will.
Is there a significant return for the investment of proposing and receiving approval for an application like this in terms of being able to build a tower versus being able to co-locate elsewhere?
Well, I think that's a business question, and I think I won't answer that if it's all right with you.
I think it's probably obvious. In summing up, do you have a conclusion as to whether AT&T specifically needs this cell tower location?
I do, and probably the most efficient way to communicate that is simply to cite the conclusions from my report, which are just a brief few lines. This report has examined a tower site proposed to be located close to a residential area. The provider, namely AT&T, has concluded that this site is the only practical one available based upon a computational model of signal coverage. The computations seem unsupported by comprehensive measurements. I disagree with the conclusion and I question the accuracy of the computations. And we've just finished discussing that. There's just a wide swath of uncertainty associated with these prediction models, even though they generate impressive graphic displays. With respect to the conclusion, the robustness of a cellular network in general and the transmitting power of handsets in particular allow much flexibility in the exact location of a tower. In other words, you can wiggle. There's a lot of wiggle room. It's a robust system. It's designed to be robust because, after all, there are unforeseen changes in weather and new construction and things like that. So they're designed to have a lot of margin of error in them. There are many alternative tower locations within a short distance of the one proposed by the provider. Notably, these include a large number of utility poles located within the region of reported inadequate signal coverage. By law, as we've just recently discussed, the utilities are required to allow the provider access to these poles. New and emerging technologies are alternatives to any additional towers at all. These towers include femtocells, distributed antenna systems, and intelligent signal boosters. And we've discussed those already this evening. They're just things out there, some of which are available now and actively marketed by AT&T that will provide robust coverage inside homes and houses and office buildings, things like that. With respect to the accuracy of the computation, the model purports to accurately predict signal propagation, including the effects of multiple, and I would emphasize not just multiple, but uncountable, geometrically complicated structures such as trees and buildings. While such models can provide useful guidance, and you know, it's a good starting point, it is doubtful that they are more accurate than plus or minus 10 dB. With that margin of error, there may in fact actually be no lack of signal coverage. And so I would suggest to AT&T that they come and make some extensive measurements to verify or not verify that the signal is lacking in the area where they report it. Just a anecdotal reports of dropped calls would not convince me.
Finally, Dr. Ains, Exhibit 21 describes T-Mobile's expanded coverage map. Is that correct? And this is
that's the title
from the internet,
right?
And it shows the two locations, two of the three locations that we discussed earlier, for those towers that I think Mr. Reifel discussed. Is that correct? In South Bethany and just north of Fenwick Island.
That may be. Is that the South Bethany water
yes.
tower?
Mm-hmm. And the T-Mobile site that was on the map. Does the map show any gap of coverage in the Bethany area?
No, it certainly does not. It's all solid green.
From your analysis of the map and what you've seen and what you've studied, does T-Mobile have the right answer?
Well, their answer is as good as AT&T's. To be fair, I would question where this data comes from. But if the data is accurate, they obviously have excellent coverage.
And finally, the news this morning is that there's a possible merger of the two?
Yes.
Would that provide, in your opinion, better coverage for AT&T?
I think that's pretty obvious.
Thank you.
Dr. Raines, I have a question regarding the utility poles.
Surely.
And the antennas. the antennas that you referred to are, it appears that in this picture, it's a specially designed utility pole. Do those antennas also work on regular the wooden poles like we see much here in Sussex County?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean when you say it's a special utility pole.
Well, the utility poles in the picture that have the antennas on them are metal monopoles, if you will.
Yes, they look very much like the monopole proposed by AT&T.
And the pole in the foreground of the picture from third from last is a wooden pole, which is very common in the type poles that we have here in Sussex County.
Yes.
Do they make an antenna to fit on those poles, or?
Well, again, personally, I'm not aware of that, and I think that question is best answered by a mechanical engineer. It's yeah. really a matter of whether the wood can support the weight, and you know, it's that. But there's nothing inherent in wood as a material that would prevent you from doing that. There's nothing from an electronic or electromagnetic point of view that would cause you not to use one.
Right. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Ryan.
Truly. I'll take that along.
Yes, sir. Mr. Henning?
Mr. Calloway, I don't think we need reactions.
Thank
That's
you.
Not part of the routine.
Folks, if you just refrain from commenting, please.
My next witness is Randall Handy. Randall, would you, and your CV is
yes,
on the fifth page of your presentation. Would you please discuss your credentials as an appraiser?
Yes, sir. Randall Handy, I own a real estate brokerage firm in Seaford, Delaware, Handy Realty, and I'm also a general certified commercial appraiser. And I've been doing commercial appraisals for probably 25 years. I'm also a licensed real estate broker in Delaware. I've also attained the designation of CCIM, which is a commercial brokerage designation, generally perceived as being the equivalent of a master's degree in real estate. There are about 11,000 of us around the world and considered to be experts in the field. My background at the University of Delaware, 1966, Mechanical Engineering Administration, and a whole lot of other courses that I've taken over the years for real estate brokerage and appraisal.
Have you testified in court before concerning your appraisal work?
Yes, I have. Many times. I've been in front of this board a couple times, and I've testified in Superior Court, Family Court, Federal District Court in both Delaware and Florida.
Mr. Handy, of the three types of methods of appraisal, the cost approach, the income approach, and the market or sales comparable approach, which do you feel is the most accurate method of appraisal in the present case?
The market or sales comparison approach is the most commonly used method in appraising residential properties, and that's the method that the industry uses generally.
Were you requested by the Sea Pines Village Homeowners Condominium Association of Owners to investigate and render an opinion concerning the effect of the temporary tower and the proposed 100-foot cellular monopole upon the neighboring and surrounding residential properties,
yes,
not
sir.
Only of Sea Pines Village, but of other units?
Yes, I was.
What did you do in regards to preparing and investigating?
Well, the first thing I did was visit the property. And subsequently, if the gentleman would look at the two aerial photographs that I've developed.
This is in Exhibit 18, gentlemen.
Correct. The first one is a direct orthographic view, and it shows the location of the proposed tower, identify the commercial properties in the area, as well as the residential properties, particularly Sea Pines Village and several residential properties within the 500-foot radius that's required by the statute. And the second photograph is included to give a little bit better perspective. It's an oblique angle, sometimes referred to as a bird's eye view, and I think it shows a much better visualization of the area in question. In both the location as well as a general feel of the relationship to the tower. And I've tried to indicate the approximate size of the tower relative to that circle by the vertical line marked in red.
Did you perform evaluation analysis?
I did in several aspects. The so-called match pairs analysis, which is a very valid method of analyzing data and appraising not only residential properties but other types of properties, relies on having a sufficient amount of data. In the case here, we don't have a whole lot of data, and so I've tried to use the information that is available to deduce a conclusion. And I've analyzed the sales of four properties in Sea Pines Village because they were the most affected community. Three of them were actual sales, one of which is still pending, but is based on the listing agent, a firm contract. The one sale that I've marked as sale number three is the one that's represented to be a foreclosure sale, and in fact it was, but it was negotiated by a gentleman who actually is here this evening, he'll probably testify later, that the cell tower was a contributing factor in his decision to determine or to offer a price for the property. That particular property was listed for $375,000 and ended up selling for $250,000.
So it was listed during the pendency of the cell tower, the previous cell tower application?
Right, it was. And the so I tried to extract from that information, as difficult as that may be, I tried to extract some sort of a indication of what was happening. And the conclusion I came to that was that the price reduction ranged from as little as 7% to over 33%, and that the with that information I went to as one aspect of my analysis. I tried to poll the experts in the field and the realtors who were in the direct market in Bethany and Fenwick Island and the resort areas are by their very nature going to be the best experts of what's happening in the market and what may or may not affect the market. And I polled 25 different brokers and salespeople. And unanimously, they made the statement to me that a cell tower in that proximity to a residential development would have a negative impact. And then I asked them, well, fine, I agree. How much of a negative impact? Well, that was a little harder for them to come up with but it was, and they indicated it depended on the distance from the tower. But that ranged from, their comments ranged from as low as 10% up to 35%. So they then, my objective was to try to graphically interpret what that meant. So without having a great deal of data points to go from, I developed a graph of reduction in value against distance from the tower. And my intuition tells me that that's going to perform in an exponential manner, meaning that it's not going to be a linear relationship. And so that the closer to the tower, the higher the percentage of reduction in value, and it will diminish as you go away from the tower. And so that was my attempt to quantify the reduction in value that I anticipated would be experienced. And then I sat back and said, and I'll read this because I think it's important. Our system of justice and concept of fair play relies in many instances on the old English system of common law, which in turn relies on the reasonable man concept. This means that most good decisions are based on common sense. And, quote, what would a reasonable man do or say in this case? Given a situation where you have a choice, one, to buy or rent a property in close proximity to a 100-foot monopole cell tower, or two, to buy or rent a property not in close proximity to the same cell tower. Common sense dictates that a reasonable man would choose a second option. This is reflected in the perception of lower value in the first case. But an even worse condition, because a guy who is thinking about buying a property is one thing. He can make a decision to buy or not buy and move on. But an even worse situation is when a person who already owns a property, already invested his money in that property, under known zoning and other conditions, is forced to accept a special exception that definitely reduces the value of his property due to no fault of his own. In the case of the Sea Pines Village condominium, I estimate a loss in value of between $50,000 and $100,000 or more in real money. And that's a very important issue, obviously, to the owner. So the final conclusion I arrived at is based on my above analysis and over 35 years of experience, it's my professional opinion that the reduction of the construction of the proposed 100-foot high monopole cell tower will result in a significant, I repeat, significant reduction in market value for all residential properties within that 500-foot radius, and in the case of Sea Pines condominium, Sea Pines Village condominium, the units will be negatively impacted, most probably in a range of 15 to 30% of the market value that would have been before the cell tower was proposed. And lastly, the county's zoning regulations itself, the preamble to the zoning regulation, says that the zoning regulations are made with reasonable consideration, among other things, of the character of the particular district involved, its particular suitability for particular uses, the conservation of property values and natural resources, and the general and appropriate trend and character of land, buildings, and population development. That's the premise upon which this whole system is based.
Mr. Handy, let me ask you a couple of questions. Sure. About the AT&T's expert testimony. First, Mr. Trice stated that there were only two properties that he could make a matched pair for. Do you feel that Sea Colony units are a fair matched pair based on their distance from the proposed
AT&T location?
I don't know, no.
In regard to the foreclosure sale that you just mentioned, Mr. Trice stated that that was not a proper piece of property for his analysis because of the foreclosure, but you stated that it was on the market, correct?
Right, it was.
During the foreclosure?
During the foreclosure, and the price kept dropping, and Mr. Cox, who ended up purchasing it, told me himself that, in his opinion, that the cell tower influenced his decision to place a place a value on a property to the tune of about 30 or 35%.
Let me ask you briefly about the Maryland, the Ocean City, Maryland comparables that Mr. McCann mentioned. First of all, is West Ocean City or Ocean City Bayside or Sunset Island at all comparable to the properties at Sea Pine Village or the surrounding neighboring properties?
It's a resort area, of course, but it's a different state. It's a different county government. It's a different marketplace. And you would only extend your circle looking for comparable sales beyond the immediate area if you couldn't find other comparable sales. Now, instead of going to Ocean City, it could certainly have gone toward to the north.
Is this a different market? Is it more dense in population?
No, I'm not sure I want to characterize it that way, but it is a different market.
From his testimony, could you determine whether this was a before and after the location of a cell tower event, or was it that the cell tower had existed or the transmission tower, like for the fire company, had existed for quite a period of time, and he was only comparing houses in different locations?
Yeah, the,
is that what was happening?
Yeah, the market kind of assimilates, I guess, and fire towers are kind of looked upon as a little different animal. Some of your civic pride enters into some of those decisions.
What effect would the addition of a cell tower close to an existing water tower had, as he said, in the Summerhouse condominium buildings in Ocean City Bayside?
Again, I have to use my own perception. A water tower is in a municipal setting is a necessary device. Certainly a cell tower can be characterized the same way, but I don't think that the average user, buyer, investor in resort property will take as much offense to a water tower, unless you're right beside it. That would be one thing. But the cell tower would be of lesser concern, or the water tower would be of lesser concern than the cell tower.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Hammond?
Any questions at all?
No, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My next witness is Glenn Piper, Landmark Associates. Glenn, you have your report. Would you please tell the board about your qualifications, your credentials, your licenses, and your experience?
Okay. My name is Glenn Piper. I'm the owner and president of Landmark Associates, located in Lewis. We do residential appraisals exclusively in Sussex County, okay? I don't have the MAI degree. I'm not a certified general. I'm not a commercial appraiser, but what I do is over the last 18 years wear tires out between Lewis and Fenwick Island, my main market. I'll be down here at least two more days this week just doing that coast. Last year, I'm a lot smaller as a business. I have a few other appraisers, but in a locale such as Bethany, and I do just legal work along, you know, estates, litigation, the total value of what I did last year on residentials probably was over a quarter billion dollars of real properties residential. So what I lack in the big degrees, I have just an intimate live every day on Route 1 between Lewis Five Points, and I don't even go into Ocean City. I'm college educated, been here 20 years in real estate, 40 years. I'm also a licensed broker.
Can you approximate how many surveys you've performed in the real estate business?
In appraisals altogether?
Yes.
6,000, 7,000. I think our numbers are up to close to 7,000.
Were you requested by Sea Pine Village to perform an analysis of the impact that the present wooden temporary cellular tower and the proposed 100-foot monopole would have on nearby and surrounding property owners?
Yes.
What did you do in regard to the preparation for your study?
Well, I've listened to three other appraisers, okay? I'm always in an awkward position having to sit here and contradict what two other MAIs say is fact. I looked at it from a lot of different angles versus matched pairs, okay? And they even made a little valiant attempt to try to prove matched pairs. And the sample was so small, I included it in one of the chapters. And it did provide some evidence, okay? But I started out basically just, and I designed a report to be read by the audience. I'd make references in the report that only somebody that lives in Sussex County is going to know what I'm talking about. So I didn't try to go crazy. First thing is I did was to define the problem, okay? Namely, in appraisal terms, what that cell tower equals is what we call an externality, which means something outside the property could have a positive effect or always has a positive effect on something. The reason I brought the definition in the early chapter of what I was trying to prove is because I wanted to illustrate just briefly in a later chapter that the cell tower is just one example of something that has a negative influence on value right under everybody's eyes in the Bethany Market area. The biggest example, okay, that I used as a other externality was Route 1, okay? If you're on the defining factor, east and west of 1 is defined in RMLS as a market area. So I'm leading a little bit into the match pairs. I couldn't match pairs east and west of Route 1. There's a defining value difference there that if you're east of 1, a lot single family might be 800,000. Walk across Route 1, look at each other, and it's 400,000. I had an example I've also brought in of in North Bethany Beach, Ocean Ridge West, the transmission lines that were referred to earlier run right along the west side of Route 1. And I had to, 14 years ago when Ocean Ridge West was back from the RTC, I got the marketing contract. And most people ride by those towers, never pay much attention to them until you try to sell a lot underneath one or next to them. And we had to discount them. At the time, one lot further in, west, was 85. We sold the lots on the highway as low as 50. Just, and they were technically closer to the beach, should have been worth more, but we had to get a footprint redone because the cell tower was within 10 feet of the upper deck. So we had to get a variance. It might have even been in here. So I was just trying to keep it local and common sense and simple examples of where externalities really do affect values.
Mr. Piper, did you find in Southampton that there were the possibility of match pairs?
I found a real gem as far as what I thought was just an extreme situation of six houses with a tower, and it might have been a relay tower much bigger than 100 foot, and these houses just sat under there. I tried to track the sales of them, okay, when they were originally sold and then when they resold. And it was hard, just not enough numbers to do anything, but what stood out, okay, there was a value difference, was the days on market, okay? Even in the best of times, those lots took 400 days to sell versus 100 days on average, let's say, in 06. So again, when I look at match pairs, you've got to be able to, on match pairs, isolate everything else out to come up with two equal circumstances. And the thought I had when I was listening to the match pairs analysis that was done in Ocean City, West Ocean City, was They didn't mention when these sales transpired, okay? But to have any kind of numbers, they had to transpire between 04 and 06, because there haven't been any sales that you could quantify since 07. And to put it bluntly, as a realtor, as an appraiser in 04 to 06, people were in a feeding frenzy. They'd buy anything. They didn't care what they looked at, okay? And I saw it firsthand. So I, tongue-in-cheek, I question match pairs done during that period. I just don't think they're applicable today. To do them today, I think it was Bill McCain mentioned they did a match pair around this site. Well, you know, I can sit here and mentally visual a site. If he was referring to the Sea Colony units, I assume he meant the high-rise units that look at you dead east. Well, their balconies all face the ocean. You walk, the back doors are on the back. There's no way they even look out at the back, so to do a match pair with Sea Colony high-rise don't make any sense at all. To go north of the subdivision, you hit right on the property line, pine trees, all the law lobbies, so nobody's got a visibility on Brookwood, Parkwood, all those other streets. They really can't see the site. To go across the street over on the other side you're on now, west of Route 1, there's really now, you got to break out the difference in distance to the beach and that externality to be able to isolate down and say, oh, the cell tower did this. So I really came to the conclusion I couldn't match pair anything. I just knew it so well. But then what I did, and want me to continue.
Well, I'd like for you to focus on Sea Pine Village and your opinion.
Okay. I had a couple other approaches I thought that would give me some more insight, okay, on top of everything that's published in the industry out there, and they've recited everything. We have a different opinion on how the Appraisal Institute and the articles interpret the effect of a cell tower. But two things I did want to point out. I did a survey of the realtors. I'm a member of the Board of Realtors. I got a list of every email address of every agent from North Bethany, which would have been the REMAX office, all the way down to Sandcastle at the Fenwick Light. About 238 agents have an address somewhere along there. And I did a blind survey through an internet company. And I had 10 questions. I tried to keep them as direct as I could. And the response was 20. I mean, I was a little disenchanted with the real estate community, but nevertheless, it was a valid sample, okay? And the answers came back exactly where I thought they would. They thought it would have an impact on residential values, but not a significant impact on commercial. They thought if a cell tower was at a distance, it wouldn't have an impact, but if it was up close, it would have an impact, which is exactly what all the articles, studies basically say that I put in a reference in one of the chapters. The closer, if you're right on it, there's an impact on value, a significant impact on value. And Mr. Handy said, as you go further away, the impact diminishes to the point where, as an example, you can go down below Route 26, west of Double Bridges Road. You think it's Ocean View, but it's really a Frankfurt address. And as you come over the rise right by the Osawatomie Bridge to go down, it's a pincushion. There's so many towers there. There's got to be six of them running around, all big ones. But that area was totally developed between 02 and 07 were their days. Again, they weren't resort buyers. They were mostly permanent residents buying in there, which I find from years of experience that I contradict what Mr. Trice said earlier. Second home buyers, I think, are much more discriminating than first time buyers. They're trying to get away from every day. They want as pure an environment as they can possibly get.
Mr. Piper, so, could you go over your summary and sure. conclusions based upon your analysis? Mm-hmm.
All right, these are my conclusions, and I just I got to want everybody here, if that tower gets built, okay, everybody else gets to walk away, the other appraisers, but every day, I'm going to have to deal with this, okay, at one time or another, where it's a part of my daily life appraising, okay? So the information I've gathered here, I'm going to use in the future as, you know, as guidelines if I run into similar situations. But my conclusions were, one, the Sea Pines Village townhomes are situated in very close proximity, less than 100 feet, based on standards set forth in any, in other words, by any standard and any report, they're close, okay? The overall opinion of surveyed local realtors is that the cell tower as proposed will have a significant impact of 10 to 20% on the Sea Pine property values. Other comparable externalities in the market, the ones I've mentioned, okay, could have or have significant negative impacts of up to 50% on market value. The 50% is the extreme of extremes, the power plant. I've had houses right next to them to appraise, and they can that can impact the value up to 50%. Professional reports, studies indicate, quote, cell towers have a significant impact on adjoining property values, such that the closer the tower, the greater the impact. If I could write one sentence on every article and every report I read, that's the conclusion I got. When you get further away, it's not that serious. Based on the studies reviewed, a 10 to 20% reduction of value is likely for the subject units, depending on their degree of visibility within the community. The match pairs, as limited as it was, showed a negative impact from 3 to 12.5%, and I only had 5 sales, I think, to work with, so it was consistent, but it wasn't enough for me to hang my hat on. The overall financial impact, here's my final statement, is the financial impact extends beyond just saleability or rentability. The loss of income includes reduced real estate commissions, lower taxes, reduced transfer taxes, and the thing to keep in mind is an externality like this is in perpetuity. It's forever, okay? It's something that very, as an appraiser, it's, you have to consider it. It's not likely to ever come down.
Thank you, Mr. Piper. Any questions, Mr. Piper?
Any questions?
Ms. York? How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Would you state your name for the board, please?
My name is Vicki York.
And you were sworn in earlier?
Correct.
Would you tell the board what you do for a profession?
I'm a realtor in the Bethany Beach area. I've been in the Bethany Beach area for the past 16 years.
And approximately how many sales have you conducted in the past 16 years, Ms.?
Probably over 400.
And do you represent both buyers and sellers?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Have you become familiar with Sea Pines Village units and the common areas in that vicinity?
Over the past 16 years, I've probably had 6 to 8 sales, and probably at one time over the years, maybe 10 listings, so quite familiar with the community.
Has your experience and knowledge in the field provided you with the opportunity to study and understand how off-site impacts, adjacent property impacts have on residential property?
I do. Being quite familiar with Sea Pines, if I could just step over here to the map.
Sure.
Let's see, this is Jefferson Bridge Road. This is Pennsylvania Avenue here. And during my 16 years of selling real estate here in the Bethany area, this particular two buildings were always generated the higher value because of the location. And then as you proceed around to this particular area near the Arby's and the Pep-Up, the decks look out onto the parking lot. And then these decks here also. So they always generated a little lower value because of the location and the noise that came from the Arby's. So when you add the tower, that is going to have even a greater negative impact, particularly on these buildings, because of the proximity. Because when you're coming in Jefferson Bridge Road and you're coming into the parking lot, that's the first thing that you're going to see is that tower looming over you. And then when if you look over in this particular building, you're going to also have the tower looming over a swimming pool. So if you're a family that's looking to have a safe environment, you're going to be concerned about having that tower looming over you when you're in the pool or in the evening when you're relaxing, having the lights flashing on your deck. So this is going to be greatly impacted by the tower, and then this area will be less negatively impacted.
Ms. York, based upon your experience in commercial and residential real estate, do you have an opinion as to how that impact that you just described would affect property values within Sea Pines Village and the surrounding community?
Going back to my scenario, I would think that these two, three, maybe even four buildings here would probably see a decrease in value anywhere from probably 20 to 50%, because based on the buyers that I'm working with, they're creating their first impressions as soon as they pull up to a place. And if they see that tower, sometimes they won't even get out of the car because they don't want to look at it. And I've worked with all types of buyers, like a neurologist, an executive from a national insurance company, and they don't even want to be near high tension towers, or they don't want to be near an electrical substation. And then you add a cell tower to that, I think it's just going to complicate the resale market here, which I think is really unfair to the Sea Pines owners.
Would it had, Ms. York, on rental values for those people who are not selling but are renting?
I don't do rentals. I only specialize in sales, so I can't answer that question.
Any questions, Ms. York?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. David Girk is my next witness. David, you've been sworn in. Would you please tell the board what unit you own?
Yes, I own unit number 14 in Sea Pines.
And would you describe where that is on the aerial map there?
It's the second from the end right here. This is our back patio off the master bedroom. This is our patio where we sit around looking out at the pool. This is all grass area. You see a view of the pool. We have our barbecue here. We sit out here and out here, depending which side the sun's on, gather with friends and families, and that's where we sit.
And would you tell the board your professional qualifications, even though you're testifying as a lay witness?
Well, I did hear Dr. Raines mention something, and he said he's not a mechanical engineer. I'm a mechanical engineer. Received a bachelor's degree from Marquette University, and I am also an attorney with a degree from George Washington University.
David, now's your chance to tell the board how the temporary tower and the proposed 100-foot Monarch.
Sure. And
Monarch Tower is going to affect your use of your property and your property values and your enjoyment of the property.
Sure. Well, I appreciate the board's time tonight and Mr. Burles. And I would like to just start off mentioning that I do teach students at George Washington, so I'm used to talking to people who have had a long day and probably eager to get out of here, so hopefully I'll keep this interesting and quick, and I don't need Mr. Witzel's lead-in. I am a mechanical engineer, and to answer your question, Mr. Mills, as a platform, Dr. Rain suggested it's purely structural. There are both wooden and steel towers, like the one in the picture right outside our property, basically, and I'll indicate on the map. There's wood telephone poles along the coastal highway here. There's the tall metal poles that begin right about here, and they run every few feet. And so there's a wealth of opportunities of poles here. There's also a wealth of opportunities, and you can even see some of them here. As far as structurally, all it is a small antenna this big and some other components that go along with it. And to the extent a wooden pole couldn't, it could easily be reinforced. My mechanical engineering background and seeing the other towers in the areas and the other structures, my opinion is that it would not be difficult to place it on there, and it would not create any structural integrity problems. I would also like to just start telling you a little bit about my thoughts on the cell tower, and I'll be very brief. An important thing to keep in mind is, first off, if someone wanted to build a cell tower in the most harmful place possible, where would you build it? I think that's an important way to think about this question. First, I would place it extremely close to a dense residential property. I would make sure that that property value is tied strongly to aesthetic views and to resort qualities. I would make sure that that tower dominates the skyline and dominates the views. You would want to make sure that it is something that's easily viewable from pools and other areas where people like to spend time and enjoy the view and serenity. I would make sure I put it so close to neighboring homes and people that if it fell, it would crush those homes and the people inside. Additionally, I would make sure I pick a spot that has precarious and unsold ground, maybe some ground that floods often or doesn't have a lot of room to work with. Also, I'd make sure I place some hazards around it. Let's put something that's flammable or perhaps explodes right near it so we could enhance any catastrophe that could happen there. Then we'd want a lot of action around it. We want delivery trucks, we want customers, and we want other unknowns moving about the area. I'd also want to make sure I put this tower in a place that's subject to severe and extreme weathers. We'd want it to be subject to tsunamis or hurricanes or tornadoes or nor'easters. And we want it to be within a block or so from the ocean so that the tower was subject to the full extreme of these significant unpredictable weather patterns. This way the tower can have more often and more easily be damaged and have strewn pieces of the tower flown further. I can go on, but perhaps you have already realized that the very site I have discussed is one very real embodiment of the hypothetical most harmful place I originally described. However, you don't need accidents or severe storms or tower failures to make this proposed cell tower placement the most harmful place. Many of us here tonight are already being harmed and will continue to be harmed if this application is approved. For us, we're already living this most harmful place. There are very real and recognizable adverse effects. Adversely affected is an extremely weak characterization of what the current illegal tower and proposed permanent tower is doing and will do to my property and my use of my property. First, there can be no harm more severe adverse than a cell tower crushing my home, me, my family, and future children, which this tower can and will do if it falls to the south. It is worthwhile to note that well-known industry standard fall zones for vertical structures such as wind turbines and structures like this are at least 100 to 125% of the height of vertical structures. My home sits in or at the circle of real danger. Second, I can no longer and will no longer be able to use and enjoy my property for the very purpose I purchased it. I would like to repeat this. I can no longer and will no longer be able to use and enjoy my property for the very purpose I purchased it. I'm unequivocally stating to this board with respect that the resort home property I purchased many years ago, the place where I regularly relax by the pool deck, sit on my patio, and fall asleep while looking towards a serene sunny sky on a summer weekend day after I've worked a long 60 to 80 hour week, the place I saved money for many years to be able to afford, was killed by AT&T and Mr. Pepper when they put the illegal temporary tower up. A permanent tower will only put a nail in that coffin. If you approve this special use exception, I will immediately sell my property for whatever I can get. In essence, just dumping what was once my favorite place to relax, gather with friends and family, and enjoy the outdoors from my deck on weekends because I refuse to live in such a horrible environment. Already, I am further being concretely and severely harmed further. Many of my friends, especially those with small children, who used to visit regularly, have stated they will not visit or stay with me because they do not want their children exposed to the tower. I've investigated renting my unit on weeks when I do not intend to use it. I've had potential renters express interest in renting my unit, and then immediately, when I disclosed the cell tower next door, they changed the response to thanks, but no thanks. I cannot blame them because I feel the same way. When I was about to purchase my home in Sea Pines Village in 2005, I was also considering a place in Dewey Beach, which was larger, had more bedrooms, had a view of the water, and was a little cheaper. But there was one huge problem with that place that made it easy for me to choose my current home in Bethany over the one in Dewey. There were utility lines that ran near the porch of the place in Dewey Beach, and I refused to spend money on a home in which I would be forced to sit next to power or utility lines on a daily basis. Little did I know that I would be here today to tell this board respectfully what it and any reasonable person already knows, that a cell tower erected a few feet from my home would severely and greatly affect me and my property. I do not want an unnecessary cell tower rammed down my throat so one landlord and one cell company can make a windfall profit. And this board should respectfully not want residents of Sussex County to suffer that faith either. My personal past actions contradict Mr. McCann's assertions regarding power lines. Third, as has already been clearly demonstrated tonight, the cell tower has severely undercut and will continue to severely undercut my property value and my rental value through no fault of my own. My favorite place in the world is now my biggest financial liability, not because of a bad market or because I did not take care of it, but because my neighbor found a way to make money at my expense. Additionally, it is clear to me, and I hope to this board, that equity clearly requires this board to reject this application. Fortunately, in this case, the facts and the relevant laws of this county also require this board to reject this application based on the facts of this case. In order for the Board of Adjustment to grant a special use exception, the board must find that the applicant has proven such exception will not substantially affect adversely the uses of adjacent and neighboring property. You have already heard testimony from me on the many ways that granting of the special use exception here would do just that, substantially affect adversely use of my property, among other things. You have also heard testimony from experts on that very same thing. Over 650 people, many also properly considered experts under the law because many of them own land here. And I'm referencing the letters that were sent in and are currently in the file, many and most of whom are Delaware residents, Maryland residents, Bethany Beach, Seaford, and some people who didn't list Delaware as their residence. They live in D.C. or Philly or areas that they also come down and they live in this area. And they wrote correspondence to you also to testify or otherwise state that the property will be adversely affected or that they believe people with neighboring or adjacent property will be adversely affected. As such, I respectfully submit no reasonable member of this board could vote to approve this special use exception without ignoring the evidence and the requirements under the law. Judging by the crowd behind me, I suspect you will hear significant further testimony also identifying further current harm and likely harm that they are experiencing and will continue to experience. Section 115-194.2 of the Sussex County Code provides specific requirements which must be met by the applicant here. The applicant shall submit to the Board of Adjustment documentation showing that existing structures within a 2-mile radius of the proposed location are not available for co-location. Any application for a new commercial communications tower or antenna or monopole shall include documentation substantiating the need for such tower at the proposed location. In evaluating the application currently before you with regard to the above section, 3 points should be noted. First, AT&T does not have a gap in coverage. Second, even if there was a gap, there is no federal law or any other requirement on AT&T to improve its service. Third, there is a virtually limitless number of existing structures and preferable locations to place antennas, which AT&T is required to pursue and has failed to do so. In fact, AT&T's own multiple existing antennas nearby the proposed site are capable of providing the alleged service they are desiring. Addressing these 3 points in order, first, AT&T has no gap in service, and their own coverage maps, which they tout on commercials during the Super Bowl or in kiosks in the mall, describe their coverage in the Bethany Beach area as good. In fact, anyone that knows a little about cell phone networks will tell you that AT&T and carriers are not striving to provide more geographic coverage area. They generally want to up the volume of data they can handle in a given area so they can allow their users to play more games, watch more YouTube videos, and better use iPhones. Second, there is no FCC or other federal, state, or local requirement as to the quality of service AT&T provides. Again, AT&T's own coverage maps expose these assertions as disingenuous and wrong. Large sections of the western states have huge areas of no coverage at all. This is true of other providers as well. If AT&T was under requirement, as they suggest, the states of Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, Utah would need to be their focus for curing holes in coverage, and they would not waste their time in Bethany Beach, Delaware, where they already have good coverage. When the AT&T and T-Mobile merger announced yesterday, the result of which AT&T has touted will mean better coverage, their plea of deficient coverage abilities with current infrastructure is even more disingenuous. Third, there are virtually a limitless number of alternative sites for antennas on existing structures if further antennas were truly needed. On top of local water towers, antenna towers, buildings, and the like, already discussed as viable and preferable options, any utility pole serves both as a technically desirable platform for antennas and must be made available to carriers under 47 CFR 1.1403. As such, any argument by AT&T that this is one of a few sites or the only site available is plainly false. And before I conclude, I would just like to point a couple other actually, they've already been covered, so I guess I'll conclude my testimony. I would like to thank this board for the opportunity to be here, and I, like many of us here, ask only that this board follow the laws of Sussex County, the rules for special use exceptions, and the abundant and overwhelming evidence in this case, and do the only thing a reasonable person trusted with this important decision to us can do. Please reject this special use exception. Thank you for your time this evening, and I appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, Gary Bogosian is my next witness. He is going to testify as an architect, as a president of the Sea Pines Village Condominium Association of Owners, and as an owner himself.
All right. Mr. Chairman, can we take a short break?
Yeah.
Mr. Whistle.